Hey, what's up, Sam?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Sorry, I just had to walk my dog again.
No problem.
And it is raining them and cats. So everybody's losing their mind.
Right.
How you doing?
Hear you.
How are the vocal cords?
Oh, they're you know, clearing out pretty good. So.
Good.
Yeah, salt water does a lot.
So you're in the Midwest right now? You're on Midwestern time?
No, Birmingham. I'm in the South, but I'm in Central time. We're kind of on the same. We're straight across from Chicago, but we're in Alabama.
Okay, what brought you down to Birmingham?
I moved down here with a woman.
Did you sell your soul at the crossroads?
No. Well, there's a lot to that, but it didn't work. I moved down here with a woman, and that didn't work out, but I subsequently met my wife here, too, so I guess came out ahead on that one.
Well, I guess you just left your heart in the South, regardless.
Well, I don't know. I never know where it is. Every time I think I'm not talking about my wife anymore, but in terms of geographical regions, you know, I tend to think finally of a great deal of them, a lot of different ones.
Well, certainly that region, you know, has been home to a lot of great bluesmen and blues guitarists and gave rise to a lot of the blues. So it seems like you fit in somewhat down there.
I did learn a lot about music down here, kind of from the roots of it, and it's been an incredible influence on my playing these days. There's so much history and innovation that occurs on real base levels that are just extraordinary. And it's hard to explain, but there's a lot of soul down here. A lot of soul down here, and there's soul in the North too. And I mean, out of DC area, you're not going to find more proficient, talented players anywhere. You know, so I don't know.
Have you found proficient, talented players to play with down there right now?
Yeah, sure. There's no shortage of talented players here right now. My focus is generally. My wife and I are working on an album that we're doing together as what is usually a duo, but we're thinking about expanding the instrumentation on it. But we're called the SBGs because we had the same initials before we got married. And that was like, that's one of the ways I convinced her to become my wife. I was like, look, we got the same initials, you know? I mean, you can't beat that, you know? And then there was a lot of other things going on like that, but that was a good one. Anyway, we're the SBGs. We're working on an album it's really been a great opportunity to play, you know, two acoustic guitars, two vocals. My wife is a ridiculous singer and guitar player and songwriter. When we first started playing together, we knew that that was one thing that we'd love to do. And so we're actually doing that in a more – we're taking it a little seriously now, and we're going to put out an album together. And so that's the focus now. So I don't – when I want to throw a trio together and play more electric kind of stuff, there's plenty of wonderful people to play with down here to answer your question.
Well, how are you filling out the rest of the lineup for the album? Are you just playing it two acoustic guitars, two vocals, or are you going to have other instrumentation on there?
Well, I want to have a stand-up bass and just real light drums and just swing it out. I mean, just real rootsy, but real funky, real smart, and with harmonies, man. I mean, we got harmonies. That's, yeah, so, and, you know, she can write, and she's got something to say, and her voice is just pure, and, I mean, it's still in development, too. This is a really exciting time for us both to be learning each other musically so deeply, you know? So we're excited, and we're at the front end of it. But also, you know, on the other side of town, Cactus Groove is back playing shows. We can't get Ray from Ireland back here. Every once in a while we can. But Gabe Cater sits in and plays drums with us. And we've had some good shows in Reston doing that. So when I have to get my electric fixed, I do the Cactus Groove thing, which is just a lot of fun.
Well, how often do you get back there?
You know, it used to be more and more and more. Now it's at least 4 times a year. But I want to start, you know, I love going back there and playing those shows, you know. And then there's some good stuff happening down there again. My boy Chris Timbers is putting a really great project together. And, you know, I go out and get to play with him, and I mean, so it's exciting to be there, and plus it's such a departure from what I'm doing here that the mix of the two really keeps both sides firing. Yeah.
So going all the way back to, like, your early roots in Reston, like, how did you discover your love for music or your musical talent, like, within your family?
Well, my dad asked me when I was, I think, 4 or 5. He's like, "You want to play the violin, don't you?" And I was like, yeah, you know, and that's basically what started that. So I started off on fiddle really early, about the time. And, you know, I got okay at that. And then by the time I was 10, I switched to guitar. And then it was what I wanted to do. You know, I just took to it. I really liked it. I took to it well, and I found it was very rewarding.
When you were 4 or 5, did your family just recognize that you had, you know, a certain sense of music or a certain love of music?
I mean, I guess so. I mean, I was on the other side of that. So, you know, I mean, if they were throwing darts, they hit a bullseye, and I'm forever thankful for it. You know, like my mom's musical, my dad's a guitar player. And, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to sit in front of my dad's amp at the parties, you know, like he used to sit me there, and that would be, but, you know, so it's kind of one of those things, you know.
What kind of music were they playing or listening to? What was going on around the home?
Well, they went through the whole, I got to enjoy the, you know, I came in around 73, and I got to see the whole, you know, like the suburban parents go through the 70s rock and roll thing, you know what I mean? So there's, but my dad was from Chicago, and so he was a prolific blues fan and was around in Chicago during most of the heyday of the Chicago blues, you know, thing with Muddy and Howlin' Wolf and all that stuff. So he had a strong blues foundation. My mom, she loved to sing. You know, she brought all kinds of stuff to the table. So it was very eclectic there, what they would listen to. But actually, you know, I remember, you know, there's some radio stations probably still play the same programming that my parents were listening to in, you know, 1976. You know what I'm saying? You could turn it on right now and hear the same stuff that everybody else was listening to back then. But, yeah, what now?
When you picked up a guitar at like 10 or 11, other than your dad, who were like the guys that you wanted to play like, or what were like the first songs that you were trying to play?
Oh man, well, by the time, really, like I was just strumming on chords and learning, like my dad was first, because he taught me like how to play rock and roll and blues and, you know, 12 bar patterns and how to solo, you know, first position minor pentatonic over stuff, you know. And so, like, you know, I'm a year into playing guitar and I'm going beep, 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 and, you know, thinking like it's the greatest thing in the world, you know. And then, you know, I heard, my dad would always play me all these blues guys, and of course, you know, I remember he put me down he had a great pair of speakers in the basement, and he put me down in the basement and said, I'm going to play you something, and played, you know, Cream, that Cream album with that version of Crossroads on it. And I mean, so that was like, oh my God, you know, there's Eric Clapton for you. But then Stevie Ray Vaughan came in, and I was like, that's my dude. That's the dude. That's how I want to play the blues, like that, because it was exciting. It was just all out, man. It was strong. I've liked that a lot. So Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimmy, of course. And yeah, I really like Jimmy, Stevie Ray Vaughan, that kind of stuff. But then locally, I mentioned Gabe Cater earlier, the drummer, Crunchy Water. His brother Tarek Cater was a guitar player, and he was really into it. And so when I started hanging around that house and watching him practice and watching him read about theory and, you know, understand more conceptually about the guitar, you know, like that really influenced me. And his guy was Randy Rhodes. So now I got Randy Rhodes in there, and, you know, applying all this theoretical stuff to, you know, so, and there you go. That's basically. And then Yngwie came out, and everybody was like, what the fuck is that? Pardon my French. But yeah, so, you know, who knows?
How did you and Gabe, or you and the Caters, sort of become friends?
Well, in seventh grade, me and Lefty Fur were jamming around. He was playing bass and I was playing guitar. And through his church that he went to, he knew this drummer, which was Gabe Kater. Now, also, I've been jamming around with this other dude, Dave Linsenmeyer, since Sunrise Valley Elementary, like in sixth grade. And he actually, like, got up and was, like, born in the USA for, like, the talent show. But it was like 10 minutes of a droning C chord, listening to prepubescent voices going, "Born in the USA." And, no, you know, there was no real verses or anything. It was just like, I'm sure it was as bad as I remember. Anyway, so that's Dave Linsenmeyer and myself, and then Lefty Fur, and then Gabe Kater gets in the mix. And he has a full drum set. Like, I'm like, oh my God, this guy has a full drum set. That's crazy. You know, this is eighth grade, man. We're like, whoa. And he could play he could smack him. He could play the hell out of him. And Gabe could just, he's powerful. You know? So, yeah, through Lucky Fur and their church is how that went.
And did you guys, like, immediately sort of form a band once you went over there and you started jamming? You were just like, this is it? Now that the
hell yeah. I mean, like, who else was there in the room or could be there in the room? You know what I mean? Like, it was, we wanted to play. I mean, and everybody was like, all right. And, I mean, we got to know each other through this thing. You know, we decided to be a band then. And then it was like, okay, we're going to learn to be friends now and be cool because this is a great opportunity, you know? And nobody was like, that guy's an asshole. I don't like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we were all like, we wanted to play music. And he was like, this is a band. Either a Frank Zappa or a Dweezil Zappa song. And I'd never heard it. And it was one of those things where, you know, of course, I don't know, what were we, 13, 14? Thought that we knew everything that there possibly could be about band names. So we were like, let's just gotta pick something. You know? And And then Crouchy Water, and then, you know, we liked it enough to keep it. Nobody shot it down. So we all said, okay, there it is. And then the more that you work towards something, the more it means to you, you know, and then suddenly it, I don't know, it stands on its own or whatever.
I think it's a classic band name. I think it's great. You know, you barely find band names that 14-year-old kids come up with that can stand the test of time.
Right. That's pretty good. Well, I think that was Gabe that brought that to the table. I think because, see, the other thing about the Cater household is it was just a thriving with musical knowledge and different kinds of things. I mean, it was just those are very intelligent people over there and very artistic, too. And so it was a great place to go and absorb and put out ideas.
Well, the thing is, you probably don't even know this, but my best friend lived on Wake Robin Lane, and I spent a lot of time up there on that whole tan bark Wake Robin.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends who lived around there too, and we used to play street hockey, like out front in the street. So you guys used to be playing in the Cater household, and we could hear you.
Wow.
And hear you, like, rehearse. I could hear you out of that basement window. And we sometimes go over and look down and watch into that basement window while you guys were jamming.
Wow. That's crazy. Because that's what I used to do to John Long, you know, which that guy's, the Iceboxers, all that, Tim McGone and all those guys had a band in like this, like mid-80s, you know. So I don't know how long South Lakes was even there at this point in time. And they had a band, and I used to go up and look at that window, man, and be like, I want to do that.
And I felt the same way. I was like, that's awesome. They, you know, they play music in the basement,
right?
Rocking out, and they got an awesome band name, and they're all like rad on their instruments. Like everybody can really, really play.
Right.
That's like that is the thing to do. And you know, another interesting thing about the whole like Cater connection is Jake. You know, the youngest boy, Jake plays keyboards, and Jake could really play. And later on, he went on to play with Dennis Hoy and Kevin Whiteley. And
right.
What, you know, that their band went through different like iterations of a name, and they went through a lot of different people, but Jake was like the first member of that trio to be a part, you know, of playing with them.
Right.
And Kevin kind of continued the lineage of the great, you know, sort of Reston blues bass player.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you ever heard Kevin Whiteley play.
No, sure. Yeah, he's great. He's very talented. Absolutely.
But
definitely.
He used to tear it up, and they, you know, they performed at the South Lakes talent show.
Right.
And they covered like a Mahavishnu Orchestra song.
Right.
They were
sick. Yeah. That's I mean, wrestling, hard to, really hard to explain. I mean, you know, there was, people took music pretty seriously.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, it was our lives. Like, we believed in it, and it was, you know, pretty much the most fun, like coolest thing that you could be doing.
Yeah.
This time, you know? And all the parties and everything like that seemed to revolve around music, too. I mean, there was always, like, a band.
The best
like,
ones, man. The best ones.
Yeah.
The best parties, definitely. I mean, man, wrestling partied, too. That's the other thing.
Yeah, we partied. The unfortunate thing is the wrestling police was, you know, active and trying to break up every one of those.
Well, if you, like, the classic hiding in the woods, come on. You know what I mean? And, like, and not saying word, even though that flashlight meme is, like, so close to you, still not saying anything.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I once had a party at my house that got out of control, that turned into, like, this go-go party with, like, more than 300 people.
Oh, yeah.
My house. Couple
right.
And the cops came, and they came to the deck. And I was so drunk that, like, they walked up to me and they asked me whose party it was. And I was like, I don't know. And I just kept walking, like, and went out into the woods. You know?
You played it right.
Was hiding out in the woods at my own party and remember that same thing. Like,
man.
And then their flashlights into the woods, like, trying to see. And I'm trying to see what's, like, going on in my own house, but I don't want to go back there.
Right. I still feel like I can't talk about it, even though, you know, nobody would give a shit anymore these days. But I had a couple good ones, and I just remember one time the police officer let me off just by watching me go up and down the street with a trash bag and picking up all the trash, man. But he sure enough was following me in his car, man, the whole way. All my, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh goddamn it. Oh man. You know what I mean? But at least I didn't go to jail, so that's good.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, Kevin and Dennis were playing that party at my house. And they were, like, stuck there until my almost, like, 90-year-old grandpa came to the house.
Oh, man.
They called up my grandpa to come down, you know, in the
middle. Right, to take care of business, yeah.
And,
wow.
And everybody was like, Grandpa!
Well, man, I don't know. I'm starting to feel a little anxious, man. We got to be such.
You would have loved it, though. You would have fit right in at these parties, man. You would.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know.
But the parties getting broken up, you know, that kind of led to the whole Jam for Man thing.
Yeah. Well. Absolutely, because, they would get broken up, and then maybe at a party you'd have a lineup of, like, you know, four or five bands, and everybody was real respectful of working together, you know, because everybody wanted to play. And, like, you get to the third one, maybe, and then, it all be done. And so I think people, it's like, hey, where can we play? Give us a place to play. This isn't bad. We're making music, you know?
So what was the first Jam for Man that you guys got a chance to play?
We were involved from the top, man, from the very beginning. We were at the original meetings at the Worcester's house. Gabe and I were, I think Lefty too sometimes. We were at the Herndon police office when the first Jam for Man was brokered, you know. And it was an honor because we were young, man. And watching these older cats who were like, these were the real deal guys, man, you know, negotiate this and stand up for, you know, not, you know, it was great. It was.
Who were those guys talking about?
You know, Bale guys, LBK guys, you know, really the pillars, you know, like the pillars of the punk scene. I don't know how to put it into words, really. But these running shit. You know, we want a place to play. And
so what was that first Jam for Men like in Herndon?
It was I remember it was during the day. Let's see, it was cool. I mean, I remember not knowing exactly what was going to go on. I remember sound was always a bear back in those days, and I can't forget how involved we were with the sound, but there's going to be something that goes a little crazy, so, you know, it's like, but I have to use this pedal, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. But I remember it going well, and the big funny thing is, you know, there's no slam dancing. You weren't allowed to slam dance. So they were monitoring the dancing, which is, like, really footloosian, you know.
Yeah, when you see the pictures, it's funny because everybody's just kind of like sitting there watching.
Right.
You know, Jamie Fisher took those pictures.
Right.
I posted up on Facebook.
Right.
And it's definitely different from what you see at the community center.
Yeah, well, that's really when you, like, from the acorn grows the tree or whatever. I mean, because those were parties. Those were big shows. I mean, I remember, like, that community center used to be packed. And that was, you know, that was cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And, you know, it went on for a good long time, too.
Yep.
You know, there was a nice run of like a 5-6-7 year run.
Yeah.
Of, you know, a few times a year having those concerts there.
Yeah, I remember graduating from high school and you know, coming back and hearing that they were still going and being like, that is awesome. Not that, you know, I had to be involved with every single Jam for Man that there ever was, but just knowing that, you know, that something that a lot of people put a lot of effort to was still going on past their immediate involvement that's really worthwhile.
I wish it was still going on in Reston. You know, I wish this had become like something that was synonymous with Reston.
Well. The rest is, you know, I'd like to know something like a younger man's perspective on wrestling now, because I don't know that it's the same, and I don't know that it, you know, I don't know if that's just the product of time, or it's just myself aging, you know. It just seems like it's changed a lot to me, but that doesn't mean that maybe some of the fundamentals haven't.
Yeah. I mean, I know kids are still making music in Reston.
Yeah.
And but
there you go.
We had a connection to that community center, or at least I know I did. I know I hung out at the community center a lot as a kid, you know, and played that Black Knight, like, pinball game. And
mm-hmm.
Basement a shit ton and like went swimming in that pool.
Right.
And, you know, I even took like guitar lessons over there. And, you know, I had a strong connection to that place. So the fact that other than the fact that it was amazing that any adult allowed anything cool to happen in Reston.
Right. Yeah.
Or anything that cool, you know?
Right.
Now, did you guys expand? Did you guys get a chance to play any of the DC clubs?
I gotta get up with Gabe and we need to talk about this stuff because I'm sure we come up with the names of some of these places. But yeah, we do. The first club we played outside of anything in wrestling at all, whether it was like a private party or school related function, because we also played like some proms and stuff. Believe it or not, you know, it got a little weird there. You know, we were like, oh man, it like started picking up some paychecks, and that was like, all right. But it was called the Top Capi, and it was in Vienna, and we got like a Thursday night there, and the oldest one of us was 18, and it was a full-on bar, and we went in there and played like three sets. I remember it was like classic Iced Over Virginia winter night, you know, and we're still like loading in and out of these cars, and just a bunch of kids, man, hilarious. And then DC had some good clubs that everybody, you could go down and play it, and they were actually in Georgetown, around Georgetown at that time. But man, I wish I could remember names, but they escaped me.
I mean, did you guys ever get a chance to play like the Birchmere?
No. I played the Birchmere much later, touring around, coming back around with Taylor when I was with him. But not. I'd love to play the Birchmere with Cactus Groove. I'm gonna write that down. My personal goal list.
Because you guys were very much ahead of your time, I think, with your sound. Because I think the sound of your band, not to like try to put you in a genre or anything, but essentially I think you can categorize your band as basically like a very early jam band. You know, like you guys had this ability to like go off on a groove. You know, and you could all really, really play your instruments, and you know, you played a lot of like major key stuff, and you know, there was like a poppy element to it, but like also something that harkened back to like, you know, 60s psychedelia too. Man, it's hard to and funk also. It's really hard to characterize, and usually that, you know, that goes along with sort of like a jam band sound.
We really were deeply influenced by I'm not sure if they were a Richmond band or a DC band, but there was a funk band called Egypt. And somehow we'd seen them a couple times in Richmond, and these guys just were like, this is when like the Chili Peppers were just starting to become nationally known. Like they had pockets of the country that knew who they were. This is when Hillel, Slovak was still in the band, you know what I mean? Early Chili Peppers, and Fishbone, you know? So these were the guys that at Crunchy Water we were listening to and trying to figure out how to play like, because I mean, I remember this is how crazy it was. We've been together since eighth grade. So now it's like ninth grade. And we're like, I got it. All right, let's go listen to it. And so we go down to the basement of, you know, I think Dave's basement, and put in a Parliament Funkadelic tape. Cause we're like, what is this stuff? You know, what is everybody talking about? You know, and listen to P-Funk for the first time together. And they're like, oh, my Lord, you know. So then there's P-Funk, and then you have all those funk bands and that funk thing that we're trying to do, but then nobody, like, the first jam bands were go-go bands, man. I mean, that's once, in a go-go show, once the downbeat hits, you're not done until they're done, which is probably like an hour and 20 minutes later. You know what I'm saying? That is like, in, so that resonance, that rolling in and out of stuff, that's a go-go thing. I mean, and so put all that together, and that's, I guess, what we were turning into, or trying to turn into, if that makes any sense.
No, I totally agree. But didn't you also, I mean, the band sort of slid off and played like go-go under, you know, other names and with Split Decision too, right? Like, I mean, you also had several of your members that were playing in go-go bands, if I'm not mistaken.
No. Well, Gabe and I were the only full-time members of Split Decision at one point in time. And we were only members, I don't know that we were members together for very long. You know what I'm saying? Because I started Split Decision where I was, Tark was nice enough to ask me to be involved with the beginning of this band, Split Decision, which he and Steve Covert and Derek Decker and Blair Elrod was in there too. They were forming together. It's going to be a go-go band, but it's going to have a hard edge to it, you know? So they needed a bass player. So he asked me to do bass, and I said yes. So there was that. And then it got to the point where Split Decision and Crunchy Water were, you know, I was serving two masters. And so I stepped back from Split Decision. And that was like 3 years later or something. And then they also went through some other changes. So that's when Gabe would step in and play drums for Split Decision every once in a while. And before that, Gabe also played keys for them in and out. So, yeah.
So it's a question so important that it don't have to rhyme. So pay attention if you're missing for the stupid. Tell me, Kansa, what's the color of music? What's the color to the noise? What's the color of noise, boy? Can't find color in the noise? How you find color to the noise? Tell me. Tell me, what's the color of noise? My heart, neither black or white. It's not played by creed, it's played wrong or white. So that's the lesson from Professor Split. If you didn't get it, pay attention, don't fret. Tell me what's the color to the noise. What's the color of noise? How you find color in the noise? What's the color of noise?
Now, did you play any crazy shows with Split Decision, like in D.C. or, you know?
Sure.
Any
yeah.
Fair where they maybe, like, looked at you guys, you know, maybe a little sideways when you first took the stage?
Yeah, I mean, sure. But, I mean, that's, you can't, it was an odd situation. I mean, here you have these people who are playing this music because they generally love it, but at the same time, you know, it could be seen as, on some level, some sort of appropriation, you know, but, like, we can, you know, like, we couldn't think about that, or I couldn't think about that, you know, because I had a job to do, and that was to support my bandmates and play the best show that we possibly could, and hopefully, you know, music and love conquers all and all that good shit, you know what I mean? Everybody, you know, and everybody shows out, you know, because I can honestly say there was no ill intention in forming that band, you know? Like, we just were fans, great, big, huge fans of all the mediums that we emulated.
And later on, you know, you were back in, like, Head playing hip-hop, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Did you say H-E-A-D?
Yeah.
I need to find him. I need to talk to him. I've got some recordings of him that I need to get to him, and I need to tell him that I love him. But going back to him, that was with Cactus Groove later, when we backed him working with Tommy Shows, because he was with Tommy Shows at that point in time, which, like, Tommy taught me a lot, actually, about business, which is interesting. But that was, yeah, hip-hop... I do believe that in order to play a genre of music well, you have to have a sincere appreciation for the basic fundamentals of it. And usually the meat of the basics start with the earliest part of it. You know what I'm saying? The stuff that everybody already thinks they know, but they don't know it. They know of it, but they don't know it. You know what I'm saying? So basically, if you're going to play a genre of music, have your shit together with it. Don't mimic it. Know why an infinite number of players before you made the same choices, and only to alter them differently, incrementally through time. You know what I mean? And that's not talking about, and that's not, that has nothing to do with actually the actual music. All right, anyway, but. If you're going to combine different genres, you know what you're talking about, and try to do it in good faith, and make some stuff that's hopefully new, that hopefully people enjoy, and hopefully that speaks to their humanity in some way, whether it's whether it's positive or negative. I mean, I've had influential songs that aren't about falling in love, man. You know. But I could relate to them at the time, and they helped me through a problem.